Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Army vet John Tellier. Next, we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And, of course, we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. And we'll conclude with the military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce my friend and fellow West Point grad, John Tellier. John served on active duty in the Army, then went into the business sector. He now owns a company called Jetco. So welcome, John. Glad to have you join us.
Denny, thank you very much. Glad to be part of your program.
John, start by telling us about your time in the Army. You went to West Point. Why'd you go?
You know, Denny, I went really initially to play football. I was a recruited athlete, and Army had just come off a Cherry Bowl victory over Michigan State, and having grown up in East Lansing, that kind of sealed the deal. And so, as a recruited athlete, I figured I'd go out there and continue my football career, and I did. I played for a couple of years, and then I realized that I was not going to be successful. My GPA, I think GPA was 1.77. and so I had to make some hard life decisions, and ultimately those were the right ones. And I really liked the military. I liked the structure and the discipline and the physical aspect of it. And so when I was a cadet, I was able to go to jump school. I was able to go to jungle school. Able to spend some time overseas and do a lot of great things that other folks in the in college wouldn't be able to do. And my ultimate goal, my father was an infantryman, my grandfather an infantryman before him, so it was kind of a natural progression. And so I wanted to be an airborne infantry ranger 82nd kind of guy. And well, I got the Airborne Ranger, but I didn't initially get to the 82nd. I went to the 3rd Armored Division. And so I obviously, after graduation, I spent some time down in Fort Benning in Columbus, Georgia, and then deployed over to, as a matter of fact, I deployed on Halloween to Germany. And then I was there for just a couple of weeks, and then the 3rd Armored Division, my brigade, went through a Grafenwehr and Hohenfels rotation. And so it was literally baptism by fire. And I learned a lot, and both personally and professionally. And I was kind of like the last lieutenant to get to the company. So I think I had 14 soldiers in my platoon, and I was authorized strength of 2 to 3 times as many. So it was a little disheartening. And then we came back from our deployment over in Grafenwehr, Germany, and I was a staff duty officer. And I'll never forget the day. I think it was either Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld said, the 3rd Armored Division is deploying to Saudi Arabia in support of Desert Storm. And the phone just rang off the hook. And lo and behold, my 14-person platoon turned into a 35-person platoon in a matter of 2 weeks. Obviously, we deployed over to Saudi Arabia Christmas Eve of that year. I think that was 1990. And got prepared, obviously, won in a very short period of time, then redeployed. And then we come back and figured we'd have some time off, and we did, because the Army said, well, the 3rd Armored Division is going to furlough its colors, and now you got to go find a job. So my job for the next couple of months was to have a formation in the morning and then help my soldiers find jobs, go interview with different battalions and brigades, and ultimately I was able to go down and get assigned to the Airborne Brigade down in Vicenza, Italy, with the Airborne Gang. And I spent the next 3.5 years in Italy. We weren't home very much, so we were deployed all the time. And that was a very unique and challenging experience. It's a different group of people, different group of soldiers. And I really liked the airborne esprit de corps. Then I came back to the advanced course and spent some time. And then the Army said, you know, we let too many captains get out. And so you're going to have to go teach ROTC at the University of Mississippi. I said, no way. And I look back on it now. It was a really, really, really good experience. I had the chance to work with, you know, basically two groups, two classes of great young Americans who were joining the Army. And my job as the MS3 instructor was to get them ready for advanced camp. I was also able to go to school since I was technically a professor of military science or an assistant professor of military science. And so I was able to go to school. And the reward that the Army kind of held at the end was, you know, since we need you to go teach ROTC, we'll give you your choice of assignment. So I was able to go back and join the airborne gang for an assignment with the 325, which had reflagged and come back to Fort Bragg. So I showed up at Fort Bragg and I don't think I was there maybe a week or so. And I was off to a deployment to the Joint Readiness Training Center in Fort Polk, Louisiana. And that was my first jump with the division, was a mass tac, nighttime mass tac, heavy combat equipment into Fort Polk. And so it was an experience. And I spent 3.5 years there at Fort Bragg and commanded an airborne rifle company, which I think was probably the best job that I had in the Army. And then I was able to, the Army let me go and command another company. And so I had a headquarters company back at West Point, 1-1 Infantry, which had over 700 soldiers, including the superintendent and his staff. So it was funny signing the three stars request for leave and for vacation. And at that point, I had just gotten promoted to major and had a family. And so I made the decision to leave active duty and then go pursue a career in, of all things, medical devices. And I started with medical devices and then went to work for a small business and then started my own company in 2006.
And we've only got a minute or so left, but talk about that business you started, Jetco.
You bet. So Jetco Solutions, we're a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business. We help other businesses sell to government, in a nutshell. And we've got full-time writers, researchers, business developers. And so if you want to sell something to the government, whether it's a service or a product, then come see Jetco and we'll partner. We're basically an extension of other businesses, sales and marketing to the government.
How can they reach Jetco?
You can reach us by going to the website, jetcosolutions.com. You can call us at 616-570-0067 or send me an email at jteller@jetcosolutions.com.
And if you can't remember any of that, denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. John and I are good friends. I can get it to him.
Yes.
John, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for sharing about this. And thank you for your company, because I think it can help an awful lot of veteran businesses.
Yes, we can. And thank you for having us.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's time to run hard for a couple of miles, troops. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com, 10% off promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today. And of course, it's football season, and it's time for football co-host Quentin Roberts and me to review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Welcome aboard, Quentin. It was a great week for football if you went to Air Force.
Well, Danny, you're right. For our Service Academy teams, we are in the stretch run. Air Force is looking pretty good down the stretch. Navy and Army, they're still trying to get it together in some aspects of their game.
Yeah, Army lost by 1, Navy lost by 3, and Air Force won by 32. So that tells you how this past weekend went.
It does, Benny, and I tell you what, it's been a really good season. Really has. It was a beautiful day in Air Force land. In Colorado Springs, Colorado, as the Air Force football team moved to 7-3 on the season, 3-3 in the Mountain West Conference, with a decisive 35-3 victory over the New Mexico Lobos at Falcon Stadium, led by QB Hazzie Daniels, who accounted for 113 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns on just 9 carries, Denny, adding a 33-yard touchdown pass to David Cormier. In the third quarter, fullback Brad Roberts, he's looking like he's a strong candidate for the offensive player of the year in the Mountain West Conference, averaged nearly 6 yards per carry en route, 163 yards on 29 carries. He was indeed the epitome of a workhorse. This senior now sits fourth all-time in rushing yards in program history. And that was Roberts' 17th career 100-yard rushing performance. So, yes, Danny, the Falcons prevailed. They look good doing so, played a strong game, and they're looking good as they move down the stretch of the season.
Yes, they did. We got to be proud of those Falcons. Army was ahead and could have won.
Danny, it was a tough day at the office for the Black Knights as they dropped to 3-6 on the season. In a narrow 10-9 loss against Troy. It was the first ever meeting between Army and Troy, as Army's defense held Troy to only 72 yards on the ground and 264 yards for the game. In fact, Army outgained Troy in total yards, 357 to 264, and gained 5 more first downs. But ultimately, it's only one real statistic that matters in football, and that is the final score. I hear Tyler started at quarterback for the Black Knights and rushed for 100 yards on 27 carries and a touchdown to lead the Black Knights' offensive attack. Army received the game's opening kickoff, moved down the field, and it was topped off by Tyler's touchdown run. But I tell you what, there were turnovers deep in Troy's territory, and Army has just been misfiring a little bit too much this year. Troy was able to keep them off the scoring, keep them from scoring, even though they fell down 9-0. Troy in the second half were able to put in a field goal and add a touchdown to win the game by really the score of a missed extra point, 10-9.
That's got to be embarrassing when the missed extra point that does you in. But that's life, isn't it?
Well, then it is, unfortunately, and it's just a tough way to lose a ball game. Again, Army is all our Service Academy players. They play hard, but sometimes it's just not to be, and this year, it's just not their year. You wonder what exactly is missing It looks like they're playing the same brand of football, but there's just something missing a little bit on the banks of the Hudson this year.
Yes, there is. And Navy did pretty well, even though they lost. They were playing good football.
Well, Denny, they had the toughest task of all three academies going up against number 20 and, of course, always highly ranked Notre Dame Fighting Irish. The game was in Baltimore, and Navy really gave a valiant effort coming back in the second half, but just falling short as they moved to 3-7 on the season, Notre Dame to 7-3 record. Navy in the second half outgained the Irish, but the Irish just were already too far ahead. Coach Niumatalolo said, "I am proud of our players, and I don't think I've ever been more proud of a team after a game, win or lose. Thought our kids battled till the end. Great testament to who they are, their character and fortitude, their resolve and resiliency." It was Brian Lindsay who reached around a defender to make a spectacular touchdown catch for the Fighting Irish as they took a 35-13 lead at the intermission. But Navy in the second half, as I said, they really played good football. Navy's Embiid Williams was positioned between Lindsay and the ball, you know, on that great catch. But again, getting back to Navy, you know, they really, in the second half, found the offense. They were able to run that option, keep the ball away from the mighty Notre Dame offense, and really just made a real game of it and had a chance to come even closer. But it was not to be as they fell 35-32 in Baltimore.
And Merchant Marine sort of did a job on the Coast Guard Academy, didn't they?
Denny, it was the annual rivalry between the Merchant Marine Academy and the Coast Guard Academy. And I tell you what, it lived up to its billing. It was the Merchant Marine Academy who prevailed in the end. But it was definitely a close game. Merchant Marine had a better season, going 6-3 overall to Coast Guard Academy's 3-6 record. It was a comeback victory, but a victory nonetheless for the Merchant Marine Academy as they win 4 straight Secretary's Cups for, I believe, their first time in history. And so Coast Guard's got a little work to do, but it's been really fun following both teams this year and getting to know them as well as their opponents quite a bit.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Quentin Roberts about Service Academy football. Okay, this week, Army plays University of Connecticut, UConn. Air Force is at Colorado State, and Navy hosts the University of Central Florida. We just got a minute left. What do those look like?
Well, Danny, UConn has started off really slowly, but they've come back, and over their past few games have really, I think they're on about a 3-game winning streak. And so that's going to be another tough game for the Black Knights. Air Force plays Colorado State. Oh, another rivalry game. This is going to be senior day for the Falcons. The last time that they donned the blue and silver in Falcon Stadium. And so that will be a big, big day, big game for the Falcons. The Falcons should prevail as Colorado State is really going through a transition season. And then it's Navy goes and travels to Central Florida and Orlando, Florida. Boy, you know what, Denny? Navy has to prevail in one of these tough road games. And this just could be the one that does it as they go into their annual tune-up before, of course, the Army Navy.
Yes, sir. At a game which I will be present. Thank you, Quinn. Thanks for your insights and for being part of the team. We'll be back on next week, bro.
All right, Denny. Looking forward to it.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss this month's Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. you can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
Troops America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com, or you can comment on Facebook. Now it's time to discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Chris, welcome aboard, bro. I guess I'm not supposed to say that to an Army guy, am I?
No, it's okay, Danny. We are in the Brotherhood forever.
Yeah, we are. Give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army.
Okay. Unconventional career, although I graduated from the same illustrious institution you did in 1987. Branched aviation, did some normal Army stuff, but the Cold War was over, so I got out because it looked pretty boring. I joined the reserves, and then I quickly joined the Guard when I missed it too much, and started flying again and doing all the normal good career progression stuff that you're well familiar with, commanding company, and I commanded a battalion, which I took to Iraq during the surge, which was kind of the pivotal event for my career because the battalion did so well. And that gave me some other opportunities to command a brigade and then to become a general officer down the road and do some very interesting assignments with not only a joint multinational command in Bosnia, but also working in the Pentagon, seeing how the Army worked on the staff there, but also being in a combatant command at NORTHCOM. So it was great. It was 31 years. It was a very unconventional, strange active duty, National Guard and active duty again type of career, but it was wonderful, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I hear you, bro. I wouldn't give up a minute of it. Okay, the Battle of the Month. You picked one from sort of the beginning of our nation, didn't you?
I did. I'm a believer that this forum will allow us to educate some Americans on some key decisive battles in our common history, and Saratoga is definitely one of them.
It certainly is. If you look at the war, you don't even have to look carefully to see how important Battle of Saratoga was. Give us the background on it.
Okay, so let me start with why I think everyone should know it. It happened in September and October of 1777. So I'm taking you back, of course, to the Revolution. We're 2.5 years into the war, which really started in 1775, as you know. And Americans should know this because it really was a turning point of the American Revolution. You know, we say that a lot about battles, but this one clearly was a turning point because it 2.5 years into the war, things weren't going that great. Washington had been defeated in New York and was kind of licking his wounds in Pennsylvania. And this rejuvenated the flagging sentiment throughout the nation. At the same time, it actually took a British army out of the war completely, which was significant and just, you know, numbers of soldiers and combat power. And then maybe the most important thing is this battle, this victory convinced France to enter the war on the side of America. It gave them enough confidence that this fledgling republic might actually work. And that was critical to the outcome of the war, as you know. So that's why I think Americans should know Saratoga in our history.
Yes, sir. And I think just the point that you made, that really was, I agree, and I think everybody agrees, the turning point for the French in their decision to support us. Because without their support, we didn't have much of a chance. They didn't give us a ton of support, but they gave us just what we needed and just about the time that we needed it.
That's right.
I don't know if it was dumb luck or God's blessing or great French insight, whatever it was, it sure worked, didn't it?
It did. And whenever I'm tempted to criticize the French, I realize how important they were to the launching of the American experiment. So I'm forever grateful to the French. And this was the turning point that brought them in. Yeah, so I'll summarize it for you real quick as I try to do in this format. So the British had a plan. General William Howe is in command in, you know, in the continental colonies for the Brits. His plan is to split the colonies in two along the Hudson River, Lake Champlain line, if you can sort of visualize that. He sent his plan to Lord Germain, who approved it. Now, one thing really interesting about this battle, the setup of the battle, is nearly simultaneously, General Burgoyne, who's the star of the show in this case, he's a separate commander up in Montreal. He submitted a different plan to Lord Germain, and Germain approved his plan basically concurrently. And they were slightly different plans. Howe's plan was Burgoyne would come down from Canada with his force, and Howe would move up from New York with his force, and they would create this cut line along the Hudson River. They would converge at Albany. And Burgoyne's plan was sort of three axes of forces. His from Canada, Howe's coming up from New York, and a third force operating in Lake Ontario would come in from the west, and they'd converge on Albany. So you got these two competing plans, slightly different. They're both approved in London.
But they were both valid plans. Either one of them could have succeeded, right?
Absolutely. Both valid plans. But the strange thing for me is they were both approved. And here's the Achilles heel that historians note, but people aren't familiar with, is General Howe changed his plan sort of at the last minute and actually got the approval from Lord Germain. And he said, well, I'm gonna go after Washington, and I'm gonna go after Philadelphia. At that time, you know, the capital basically of the colonies.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go after Philadelphia first, and then I'm gonna come up and meet General Burgoyne around Albany. So that changes everything. So as Burgoyne starts moving south, he's operating on the assumption that Howe's operating kind of under the same plan as he is, but he's not. So Burgoyne is moving south in mid-June from Montreal. They come down and they seize Fort Ticonderoga. Everyone's heard that name. And everything's going really well for Burgoyne and his campaign. He's got the big fort. There's nobody really standing in his way. There's no big Continental Army in his way. And so he continues to move south. So everything seems to be going good. Now, on the American side, Washington is, of course, now protecting Philadelphia from Howe's intentions. He does hear about Burgoyne's move, so he detaches a portion of his army to go north, you know, and I won't go into all the details. So Washington's doing what he can to help his general up north, which at the time is Major General Philip Schuyler, who'll be replaced in a minute. But as Washington's trying to help out, Schuyler's up north. His garrison has withdrawn from Ticonderoga and doing something very smart. They're now doing sort of guerrilla tactics against the advancing British, and they're making their movements very slow because Burgoyne has decided to take an overland route instead of, at the time, maybe a little more difficult to get into the waterway to his west and continue south. And so he goes overland, which is a mistake. He gets bogged down, and the militias and Schuyler's Continentals are making his progress really slow and difficult, felling trees over the little roads. There's no good supply and road network in the area. So they're already starting to have trouble as they move south towards Albany. The long story made short is Burgoyne is eventually isolated. He's low on food and supplies. The colonial militias really rise to the occasion. The new commander appointed is Horatio Gates. Because he's a New Yorker, no one likes Schuyler, and now the militia is now rallying to Gates. The numbers are building up. There's two big battles. There's Freeman's Farm in September, where it's a little bit of a stalemate, but now Burgoyne is desperate. He's running out of supplies. He's low on manpower. They fight the next battle at Bemis Heights on 7 October, and it's basically, I can't wait any longer. The relief's not coming from General Howe. And he has to withdraw to back to Saratoga, where he has to eventually surrender. So it's a great victory for America. It's an unconventional way of fighting. It's very effective, but it's a critical battle in the Revolution.
It sure was. Before I let you go, Chris, you are really good at providing information about battles. How can listeners get in touch with you to learn more about battles?
Well, I do this for a living now, Danny. It's odd and it's enjoyable and it's an interesting niche, but I think anyone that likes history will love what I produce. So they just need to go to battledigest.com. It's one word, battledigest.com. They'll find the full library of these summaries, and they will really enjoy these individual battle summaries. There's just nothing else like it.
Thank you, Chris, for a great battle of the month and for being part of the team. I'm glad we're friends.
Thanks, Danny. Me too. Appreciate it.
Troops, if you're a veteran having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Andrew wrote, I viewed We Were Soldiers, and I could almost feel the fear of the warfighters and the confidence they had in Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore. Denny, did you ever give the command, fix bayonets? I enjoy your broadcast when I can stay up to listen.
Andrew, I did lead my troops into a number of fights during my 2 years in combat, but I never gave the order to fix bayonets. None of our fights resulted in hand-to-hand combat. The enemy either fled or died. But thank you for your comments.
Ah, that reminds me of that movie Gettysburg as well.
And, oh, yeah.
That was a fixed bayonet thing, too.
That was definitely hand-to-hand. I'm glad I didn't have to play that game.
No, you weren't actually at Gettysburg, were you, Colonel?
I'd driven by it a couple of times.
Okay. All right. I think I should stand down.
Yes.
Army mom Sally is still upset with the way the recent election revealed more ways to have irregular voting and voters. In her state, you don't even have to have a photo ID to vote. This isn't the nation her son is prepared to fight to defend. What can we do?
Sally, I live in Michigan, and we just passed an amendment to our Constitution that lets people without a photo ID vote. I understand your concern. We have to stay active in our state and community. We have to work to get honest, pro-American people elected and laws changed to reflect our values. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, on 25 November 1783, nearly 3 months after the Treaty of Paris was signed, ending the American Revolution, the last British soldiers withdraw from New York City, the last British military position in the United States. After the last redcoat departed New York, General George Washington entered the city in triumph to the cheers of New Yorkers. The city had remained in British hands since its capture in September 1776.
Wow. And on 24 November 1863, during the Civil War, Union troops captured Lookout Mountain, southwest of Chattanooga, as they began to break the Confederate siege of the city. In the Battle Above the Clouds, as it was called, the Yankees scaled the slopes of the mountain on the periphery of the Chattanooga lines and won.
And on 25 November 1918, a full 2 weeks after an armistice ended World War I in Europe, Colonel Paul von Lettow-Vorbeck of Germany finally surrendered his forces in German East Africa. A master of guerrilla warfare known for his brave and honorable conduct, Leto Vorbeck emerged from the First World War as the only undefeated military commander on either side of the conflict. I didn't know that, Colonel.
Must have been a great soldier, honorable and brave. And on 25 November 1941, Admiral Harold Stark, the U.S. Chief of Naval Operations, told Admiral Husband Kimmel, commander of our Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor, that President Roosevelt thought a Japanese surprise attack is a distinct possibility. Kimmel's command was specifically at the Middle Pacific base at Oahu, which comprised, in part, Pearl Harbor. At the time he received the warning from Stark, he was negotiating with Army General Walter Short, commander of all U.S. forces at Pearl Harbor, about sending U.S. warships out from Pearl Harbor to reinforce Wake Island and Midway Islands, which, along with the Philippines, were possible Japanese targets. But the Army had no anti-aircraft artillery to spare. War worries had struck when an intercepted Japanese diplomatic message, which gave November 25th as a deadline of sorts. If Japanese diplomacy had failed to convince the Americans to revoke economic sanctions against Japan, quote, things will automatically begin to happen, end quote. The message said those things were becoming obvious in the form of Japanese troop movements off Formosa, apparently towards Malaya, but in fact, they were headed for Pearl Harbor, as was the Japanese First Air Fleet. While many of our leaders anticipated a Japanese attack, especially given the failure of the diplomacy, Japan refused our demands to withdraw from both the Axis Pact and occupied territories in China and Indochina, but absolutely no one expected Hawaii was the target.
And on 24 November 1944, 111 U.S. B-29 Superfortress bombers raided Tokyo for the first time since Captain Jimmy Doolittle's raid in 1942. Their target? The Nakajima Aircraft Engine Works. Fall 1944 saw the sustained strategic bombing of Japan. It began with a reconnaissance flight over Tokyo by Tokyo Rose, a Superfortress B-29 bomber piloted by Captain Ralph Stakely, who grabbed over 700 photographs of the bomb sites in 35 minutes. Next, starting the first week of November, came a string of B-29 raids, dropping hundreds of tons of high explosives on Iwo Jima in order to keep the Japanese fighters stationed there on the ground and useless for a counteroffensive. Then came Tokyo. The awesome raid, composed of 111 Superfortress four-engine bombers, was led by General Emmett Rosie O'Donnell, piloting Dauntless Dottie. Press cameramen on site captured the takeoffs of the first mass raid on the Japanese capital ever for posterity. Unfortunately, even with the use of radar, overcast skies and bad weather proved an insurmountable obstacle at 30,000 feet. Despite the barrage of bombs that were dropped, fewer than 50 hit the main target, the Nakajima Aircraft Works, doing little damage. The upside was that at such a great height, the B-29s were protected from counterattack. Only one was shot down.
That's scary. Wow. We've come a long way.
Just went out and just tried again next time, right?
And they did. And on 22 November 1988, in the presence of members of Congress and the media, a Northrop B-2 stealth bomber was shown publicly for the first time at Air Force Plant 42 in Palmdale, California. The aircraft, which was developed in great secrecy for nearly a decade, was developed with stealth characteristics that would allow it to penetrate the enemy's most sophisticated defenses unnoticed. At the time of its public unveiling, the B-2 had not even been flown on a test flight. It rapidly came under fire for its massive cost, over $40 billion for development, and $1 billion price tag for each unit. But we got a bunch of them. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for the self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, 80-year-old Charles Cope was working at the counter of his liquor store in Norco, California, when four men armed with AR-15-style rifles pulled into the parking lot. Charles saw them in the parking lot and pulled his shotgun off from under the counter. The first robber aimed his rifle at Charles and told him to freeze, but Mr. Cope didn't hesitate. He fired immediately, sending all the young men racing for their getaway car. One robber had been shot in the arm and was yelling over and over as he ran, He shot my arm off. He shot my arm off. He shot my arm off. After the theft, Mr. Cope called the police, and three of the four criminals were arrested when they brought their injured cohort in crime to the hospital. All three criminals are being held on $500,000 bond and awaiting trial.
Thanks, Colonel. A careful study of over 200 years of gunfighting in America has taught us this important fact. The first person to score a critical hit wins the gunfight. And Charles Cope proved that when he went up against four men armed with AR-15s. In order to stop an attacker, you have to take away something that he needs to continue pressing the attack. It could be his eyesight or his legs, or maybe his brain or his heart. All of those things are essential to an attacker. But what did Mr. Cope take away from this robber? Well, he took away two things, his left arm and his courage. It's very difficult to shoulder and get off well-aimed shots with a long gun when one of your arms is dangling uselessly at your side. Double-aught buckshot into an arm at 20 feet does a lot of damage. And there's also the fear factor that comes with a shotgun. It's a powerful weapon, and everybody knows it. Mr. Cope also stopped the robbers psychologically. All these men were in their 20s, and 20-year-olds tend to think of themselves as 10 feet tall and bulletproof. But that bluster and bravado quickly turns to terror when shotgun pellets rip into your arm and shoulder and you start to bleed to death. Charles was able to get off the first shot because he was operating at a heightened state of awareness. He saw the car pull in, the men get out with guns, so he had plenty of time to arm himself and set up an ambush. But what would have happened if Charles hadn't been paying attention? Quite possibly, all four men would have been inside the store and pointing guns at him before he could arm himself and return fire. But because he was alert, he was able to take the element of surprise away from his attackers and draw first blood. In further research, I discovered that Mr. Cope had a minor heart attack after the shooting, but he is on the mend and doing just fine. He said he may have to cut back on his work hours for a while until he regains his strength. When asked if he regrets his actions, he said, "It's not going to change how I operate. I am already alert and pay attention to my surroundings at all times." Frontlines of Freedom loves the way this 80-year-old California man defended his life and his property. He showed courage, resolve, and a true warrior mindset. And of course, we wish him all the best in his heart attack recovery.
The man done good. And there's even a chance, given it's California, they might even charge the criminals.
Yes, good idea.
Okay, our movie of the month is Mr. Overton. It's a great movie. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month. I'd really appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, attorney Frank Spinner will discuss the imprisonment of Army vet Corey Claggett. Then we'll discuss the need to get our nation food independent with farmer Adam Lalonde. And we'll review the movie of the month and this weekend Service Academy football games with Quentin Roberts. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.